Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I hope everybody's doing well today, and thanks for coming by. This week, we're going to talk about relationships. Yesterday, we talked about people relationships. And today, I thought we'd talk about our relationship with material things, such as money, for one thing. I think people's relationship with money has a lot to do with how they live. By that I mean, that sounded confusing even to me. What I mean is, if you have a love-hate relationship with money, a lot of times you don't have enough to get by. If you have a relationship with money that isn't so all important, you seem to be able to stay in a place where it's not such a big issue with you. Years ago, somebody said to me, if you do what you love, money will come. And I thought to myself, I don't think I believe that. I would like to, because the idea of it is great, to be able to follow your dreams and from your dreams make enough money to survive sounds wonderful. But I'm still struggling with that because my relationship with money is not a good one. I'm going to open up some lines so we can talk. I have Shelley. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Renee.
You're on my dashboard again twice today.
Wow, I only called in once.
Isn't that strange? Because you're on one for being on for 1 minute and 45 seconds, and you're on one for not being on for anything, no seconds. So it's
well, you're showing
weird,
me
but
for
that's
each
the
reality, so there you go.
there you are. Okay. Well, and we also have Elise on, so I'm going to pull her on too, because I think all of us, the three of us in particular, have different relationships with money. So, and material things for that matter. What's important to one of us isn't important to another of us, etc. Good morning, Elise.
Good morning. How are you, Renee and Shelley and everyone else?
We're good.
Doing
we're good. How are
morning,
you today?
Elise?
I'm good. It's a new day.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's the way I feel when I wake up every day. You know, you and I, Elise, talked about this just the other day, about having not great relationships with money. And to, I think, like I said, all three of us feel differently about money. I think all people feel differently about money. But as I said, through the years, I've had many people who seem to always be okay about everything. And I don't know whether that's true because, you know, anybody can put on any face they want to for the rest of the world. The only time you know what's really going on is when somebody's willing to share it with you. So a lot of times on the outside, somebody says to you, like that statement, if you do what you love, money will follow. Well, to be honest with you, there's never been anything I've done in my lifetime that I really hated. And the one time that I did something that I found somewhat demeaning, I probably made the most money. So it's funny, but my relationship with it is probably a damaged one, probably one that needs some help. So let's talk about this. Shel, what do you think your relationship with money is?
Well, my relationship with money has absolutely changed over the last couple of years. I have actually been doing better in the last couple of years than I had been doing when things were actually more solid for me. And I think that's because my attitude towards money changed. I started studying, and I've discussed this with you, but I started studying law of attraction and things like that. And, you know, a lot of people hear law of attraction and And they think that it's nonsense. When the movie and the book The Secret came out, a lot of people bought the book or watched the movie, and it was all about law of attraction and how your thoughts basically create your life, and even around relationships, money, health, things like that. The issue with The Secret, and it's a wonderful movie and it's a wonderful book, but there's so many missing techniques that you would have to put into play for it to actually work. But the law of attraction is an absolute law. It's like the law of gravity. It's like any other law. But the toughest area to use it is money. And the reason for that is that 99% of the population has been taught in school. It's been set down from generation to generation that money is the root of all evil, that only, you know, that the wealthier get wealthier, the rich get richer, and the poor get poorer. You know, you have all these cliches out there. But they've actually seeded our subconscious, and there's also a belief that if you don't work hard, you can't make money, you know, you don't get money for nothing, those kind of things. So you have all those types of concepts out there that you hear, but actually become part of your subconscious makeup. And unless you can alter those, maybe your parents had negative attitude towards money, maybe you never had a lot growing up, you know, there's so many different things that play a role into that. And a lot of people have a lack mentality. But when you look around and you see how many billionaires there are, there's over 1,000 billionaires just in the United States alone. I mean, I want everybody to think about how much money that is. All right? There is a way of tapping into that. They're only billionaires because they've opened up and drawn in the money to themselves. But the opportunities to create situations to bring money in really aren't limitless, but we're not taught that. We're taught that there is just a certain amount to go around, and if you take too much, somebody else is going to lose out. That if we take more than our share, somebody else is going to not have enough, and that's actually not true. And that's one of the things that hold people back, just their attitudes towards money. When you start shifting your belief system, when you start shifting what you think is out there, it happens gradually. It's not an overnight thing. It happens gradually. You'll start seeing your financial situation ease up, and it can take months or even years to finally have that evolution take place in your life. But it all starts with you changing your attitude towards money and your attitude towards whether or not we really are in a lack scenario, or whether we're just being told we're in a lack scenario right now.
Well, I don't think that my relationship is about the fact that I'm afraid there's not enough to go around. I think my relationship with money stems from the fact that, I think I said this to Elise the other day, my father stood very hard about the fact that if you expect to be paid, you better be earning it. So I think it sets a specific worth on you, at least it did on me. So mm-hmm. unless I can really rise above and be like this superstar, I don't deserve to make big money. And that's a difficult place to go. You know, I'm a dropout. I have no education. I have very little that I can put in somebody's face and say, see this means I know what I'm talking about. So I have major hang-ups about my worth and how much money I should be paid for specific things. Whenever I've taken on a job and done way more, my husband always yells at me, why do you take that on? That's not your job. Why do you feel like you have to do everything? And I've questioned that. I'm not really sure why that is, except for the fact that I think I have to earn what I'm being paid. So I would say that's my biggest hang-up. What about you, Elise? Where do you sit with your relationship with money?
Oh, my God, this could be like a 10-hour conversation, if not longer. I've always worked hard. You would think that someone who works the amount of hours that I've worked would be a gazillionaire. And, you know, I've read the books, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. I'm actually reading a book right now called The Influencer, The Power to Change Anything. You know, you read. I am college educated. I don't know that that makes a difference. So, you know, there's plenty of people who have dropped out of high school and, you know, have become millionaires. I mean, look at Shark Tank and the things that people develop and, you know, come up with based on an idea. I mean, there is a lot of money out there to grab. A lot of people grab it. And then there's people like me who work and just seem like a spinning the wheels, you know, the hamster. And, you know, I've made a lot of money for other people, but I either get taken advantage of, taken for granted, or just underappreciated. I'm never with the right people at the right time with luck on my side. And, you know, it's one thing you can be woe is me, but it's another thing to just don't ever quit. And, you know, I teach my kids don't ever quit. And it's another thing, the premise, you know, insanity. What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Right.
And I guess that's kind of, you know, what I do, but I do it because I don't quit. And if I believe in a business model, if it didn't work for me at one point, and I know in my heart of hearts that it can work again, and maybe I just have to find the right business vehicle, I'm going to continue in that business vehicle until I make it happen. And that's if I go down fighting, that's what I'm going to do. And it just, I don't know. I mean, one point I'd like to bring out before I let you say something. In this book, The Influencer, it talks about the Serenity Prayer. And, you know, the Serenity Prayer, I don't know it exactly, but it basically is thanking God for all that you have, to be thankful for, to focus on that, and to just have peace. And in this book, it kind of looks down on that from a business perspective, because when people have been down and out and haven't made it, they just get to a place where they just want serenity, they just want peace. And if that's the 9-to-5 job where they're going to live paycheck to paycheck as long as they're, you know, okay with that and getting by, this book is saying, no, that's giving up. That's letting go of your dreams. And I'm a dreamer, and I just can't quit dreaming. And it's not so much the money aspect to be rich like that. You know, I don't want a bigger house. If anything, I want to scale down. I want less stuff in my life. I'm not looking to go out and spend money on jewelry and clothing and just all the material things. So my motivation for money is the freedom to have the choice to do what I want to do whenever I want to do it. And it's been burning in me since I'm 22, since it was introduced to me. It was introduced to me actually because the gentleman who was talking about freedom was basically talking about his wife who had developed breast cancer, and because they had money, they were able to travel the world seeking alternative treatments. And, you know, this was expensive, and it was even more than that. He was saying, what job can you, you know, go away from for 2 years? Or what business? If you take off from your own business, forget about it. And so that hit a real bell with me. And so I've been seeking that freedom forever. And again, it's not the quest for the dollars so much as it is the quest to have the freedom, the ability to make my own choices as to what I want to do, when I want to do it, who I want to go with, where I want to go, and so forth. And what I'd really love to do is be a wealthy philanthropist, take that money and do good things to help other people. So that's the motivation for me. Still working towards, you know, achieving, finding that right place that can get me where I want to go, and having a hard time, you know, finding it.
Well, you know, you are being directed to some good books. Now, you had mentioned Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, but I don't know if you know the history on that. I'll give you a quick update here. Think and Grow Rich is actually a watered-down version of the Law of Success in 16 Lessons. And the Law of Success in 16 Lessons was actually a watered-down version of the original book that got yanked literally within months, which was just called The Law of Success. The Law of Success was actually only 15 lessons. So a lot of people that got the second book that came out actually thought that it was updated and it was more information in it, which actually isn't true. Because what he had to do is he had to take one of the chapters that was in Law of Success, and he had to take one of the concepts that went throughout the entire book and remove it and make it a separate chapter, like it was a standalone step, like you could do it or you...
Oh, we must be at 15 minutes. We are right on the nose, so she cut out. That's amazing how that works. I knew that she would be able to hook us up with a lot of the... Shelley, are you there? With a lot of the book information, because she's an avid reader and she watches videos all the time. Okay, but let me say this, Elise, about everything that you've just said. I feel the same way. But how do you feel about making an outrageous amount of money from selling people something that they don't really need? Do you have okay feelings about that, or would you stop there?
Oh, no, I wouldn't feel good about that. And, you know, I like to feel good about what I'm making money with. So, no, I don't think, you know, that would turn me on. I mean, look, you know my history with seeking out the right company, and I saw a company that I didn't like the integrity, and I didn't care if I could have been a multimillionaire with them. I didn't like what I saw with how they held themselves, so I left. So, yeah, my answer to that would be no.
Mm-hmm. Well, and see, that's part of the problem, I think. Somehow, somewhere... And I hope I'm wrong, but if I look around and I see certain people, I see the Donald Trumps of the world, I see this organization called Beyond Organic, great idea. Donald Trump, of course, is a real estate mogul more than he is anything else. But then I get given these books from like Beyond Organic, a great guy, a great story. An amazing story. And yet all of his products are outrageously priced. You see where I'm going with this? So I feel like, you know, good ideas. We talked recently about rehab centers. We talked at length about rehab centers. Here's another very, very wonderful, very philanthropic thing to do, save our people that are, you know, reduced to a world of addictions. And yet, these places are unbelievably expensive. You use your insurance and you top it off with every bit of cash you got left to get somebody clean and sober. I have trouble with that. If you're really helping, you shouldn't be robbing.
I agree.
So in me, I have big difficulties with things like that. Mind you, I want to be paid for what I do. And if I'm running a place and I'm doing all the work and I'm covering the you know, I just, you know, kind of like the Jill of all trades, I'm finally at an age where I think I deserve to be paid well for that. But on the same token, if I were the entrepreneur that opened a place like that, I wouldn't want to rape everybody to get what I needed. And some people have no conscience about that, none. They think it's okay. Shelley, are you back?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, well, see, I have a different attitude about that. And, again, from a lot of what I've been researching, Brendan Burchard, who is one of my mentors, he wrote Life's Golden Ticket, which is a remarkable book. It's a fable based on his near-death experience. And then he went on there to become an expert in the experts arena, which is people that get up on stage and teach people. All right, on thousands of different subjects. And what he was saying is that is the biggest, what you just said, that is the biggest holdback for people that want to be in service to others, which is what you're talking about, is that they have this hook about charging a fee for it or not charging enough. They minimize their worth because they're so determined to help people, and they're trying to do it in a way that they want to make it affordable for everybody. And what he says is, he said, put out some inexpensive or free content. Now we're talking about books, but you can. There is a relation to a service-oriented industry as well. He's saying put out some free or inexpensive content. He says, but also create more expensive programs or book series or DVD series, because there are also people out there that can afford that. And if you don't make enough money, you're never going to be able to perpetuate your message. You're not going to be able to keep your message out there and help anybody. It's the same thing with a center. If you wanted to open up some sort of a health center, you have to charge enough money in order to be able to stay in business and provide these services. So you have to figure out what that is, but you have to feel good about it. If you feel good about it, enough people that can afford it will come. There's enough people out there that have money to take advantage of good services. So if you're providing something that's going to help people, the people with the money will be attracted, but you have to feel good about it. If you feel guilty, you're going to sabotage yourself from the get-go. That's just how it works, okay?
Okay, now wait a minute, because these are two different things, Shell, in my opinion. These are two different things. I realize that there are people that can afford to put a down payment on the Taj Mahal. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the fact that you say you want to help the world. The people that don't have always need the most help, always. And what I find disgraceful and what I find money-mongering is the fact that if you say you want to start a place like that, and you want to help get the world to a better place, and everybody, you know, I know a lot of people whose paycheck, especially in the restaurant arena, their paycheck is 000. Why? Because they pay for insurance. And in some cases, they're lucky enough to put $10 or $15 in a 401k on a weekly basis. So that insurance, backed by one of the richest industries in the world, is being paid. So now they got a kid that's in trouble, and they put that kid into a rehab. And that rehab that talks about how they want to make a difference and how their rehab is the best and how they're going to take care of your child, et cetera, et cetera, then they take your insurance money, which, of course, insurance companies, that's a whole other story that we've touched on a few times, but it's a whole other really murky, mucky place to be. And they accept that money, and then they say to you, by the way, your insurance won't pay for this, so this will cost you $1,000. And by the way, your insurance doesn't cover that, so this is an additional $1,500. That's what I have trouble with. That's what I have trouble with. I have no trouble with the people that can afford to do whatever they want to do because they throw their money away every day. I've seen it happen. I'm talking about your family that we talked about this the other day. Entry-level families today, if they're bringing home $40,000 a year, that's good for them. $20,000 or $25,000 is what an average family today is bringing home per person. And that's only if they've had a job for a little while. So my problem stops when I see that this is going to be an issue. That's why I loved the scholarship program at Hippocrates. Mm-hmm. And then a few years with the scholarship program, I realized that a lot of the recipients of the scholarship program connived and didn't tell the truth. And then that had to get more intricate. I get why it's difficult to make it happen. I do, because I've been there. I always tell the story about going to Brian and saying we had a staff member whose daughter was very sick and starting college. And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, we pay her minimum wage. She can't afford to send her kid here, and her kid is going to college on a scholarship. Okay, so what do you want to do? I said, I want to let her come here. He said, okay, if you think that's what we should do. She didn't show up. She didn't show up to come do the three-week program. I've never forgotten that. And
yep.
He said to me, one of the smartest things he ever shared with me in my 10 years with somebody who is, I would say, pretty accurate and pretty smart in his arena, said to me, if you don't put a worth on something, it isn't worth anything.
Right.
And that made a lot of sense to me. But on the same token, it has to be within those people's reach. And that's where I struggle. You know, that's really, really where I struggle. I have learned in the past few years, though, when somebody, when I tell you I'm broke, I mean, there's no money in my checking account, there's no money under my mattress, there's no money in my pocket, there's no money in my bra, I mean, I'm broke.
All right.
Somebody else is broke and they're getting into their savings or something, you know. But the relationship that I have with money stems from a lot of that, and it stems from a place fairness. So some of these things are not just what they seem. They're much deeper than that, and I don't think it's right. I don't think it's right for people not to have what they need. I got a grandson who needs teeth work done. He can't go have his teeth done. That's not right. He works every day and goes to school every night, and he can't afford to have work done on his teeth. How many people do you know like that? Hundreds?
Hundreds. Well, see, and I agree with you on that. I don't think that people say, well, that's socialism and all that, but I'm sorry. I don't think that health care should be only available to people that have money. I think that this is something that should be provided for us. They have so many government programs. They spend more money on the results of people not being healthy than they would spend if they would just make medical, intervention available for people at the onset of an illness. People would recover faster, it would be less invasive, and you'd have less downtime at work. I mean, we do everything backwards in this country. It's frustrating, you know. But the bottom line is, we're talking about your relationship with money on a personal level, not what everybody else is doing with their relationship with money. And the bottom line is this, is that you have to be able to create something and charge a fee for it. I understand that you want to help people that may not have the money for your program, but you have to be successful first, then you can be philanthropic. And that's the holdback. What I'm talking about right now is why a lot of people that want to be philanthropic never get there, because they're trying to be philanthropic before they're wealthy. Amass your wealth first. It's just like being on an airplane, all right? The oxygen goes down, the little masks drop. You're told to put your mask on first and then help everybody around you, because if you try to be generous and try to be kind and look out for everybody else first, you're going to be the one that's not going to make it off the plane. You're going to be the one that's going to pass out. You know, get yourself in a good place first, take care of yourself, become successful, get the money, then start using that. Once you're successful and you've attracted the people that can afford you and that have put you in a good place financially, then start creating programs to help the less fortunate, to help the people that don't have enough money for your program. Then, like you said, create a scholarship program.
That's a perfect line. That's a perfect outline, and I agree with everything you just said. However, that's my point. Like I just talked about the guy from Beyond Organic, that was his idea. He wanted to make a difference. And he went out there and he did all kinds of stuff. He bought a ranch. He has all kinds of money now, more money than he knows what to do with. So in his place to make the world healthier, he got very wealthy. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is now there's no way you can do his program unless you're wealthy. And that's what seems to happen time and time again. I think back sometimes about, you know, like, remember when Carter started Habitat for Humanity? You girls remember that when he was building?
Oh, yeah.
He even came out and helped build the houses, things like that.
Right.
And it's not very rewarding to do with people, to deal with people who, again, their relationship with money is not a good one. And if you don't put a worth on something, people don't treat it like it's worth anything. So this particular affliction spreads like wildfire. So he builds a whole bunch of Habitat for Humanity homes. Do you guys remember what they looked like after 5 years? Some of these neighborhoods that he helped build and fund and do all that stuff. Do you guys remember what happened with those?
No, I don't remember.
In a lot of scenarios, they became slums. Because nobody took care of them. Nobody treated them with pride. Not everybody. But, again, it's no worth on something. It's not worth anything. So it's a tough place to be. It's a tough place to decide, like I just said about the girl that I wanted to come for nothing. And then a year later, she goes to college, and a year later she comes home and she's so sick, and this time they come to me and I say, you have to pay 50%, because that's what by that time I had set up for all employees and their immediate family. And she paid it and she came and did the program. But I was heartbroken over the fact that what I had offered her the year before she didn't take. So, again, it always boils down to the money, and that's where I struggle, because money should be, it should be a perk. The driving force behind any of us should be our love to make a difference, our love to, maybe you don't want to make a difference. Maybe you want to sell the prettiest flowers in town. Let's take this way down several notches. You want to have the most beautiful florist shop. You want people to talk about your arrangements at every wedding that they see them at, every funeral that they see them at, everything, every place they see them, every hotel room that's decorated to the nines for a big party. They want to say, this came from Shelley's florist shop. Doesn't she do a beautiful, beautiful job? The more popular you become, the more out of reach your flowers become. Isn't that right? Oh, I've lost Shelley again. Elise, can you answer that?
Yeah. I guess as far as somebody doing a good job and they get referrals and then they up their price, I'm trying to understand, just make sure I understand what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
My ADHD
That's it.
Brain.
They're because they're so good at what they do, their prices become out of reach. And do they have that right?
They don't have to raise their prices, though.
No, exactly. They could still be with them so that your family that's making that $45,000 a year gets to do those flowers for their daughter's wedding.
Right.
That's the way we work. That's really not the way we work. And I get it, but it bothers me. I get it. I do get it. I do get it. The success, I do get the ability to become so good at what you do that it's worth more money. I get all that. All I'm saying is that it sets up such barriers. And we live now in a world where there's so many levels of not just success, but so many levels of poverty.
Right.
Yeah. You know, if you around you, there are whole families living in shelters, whole families of four and five people that live in shelters. And yet there are people that have seven homes, and some of them in Italy, some of them I understand that you earn, you know, they earned what they got, they're good at what they do. There's just something about the fairness of that I just can't get past.
Okay, but there's nothing unfair about this, and it, you know, I keep going back to the law of attraction, because when I first heard about it, it didn't sync with me. I thought it was nonsense and all that, and then years later, it came back into my awareness, and I started reading these books. And I know I got cut off before, so I don't know if you guys heard what I was talking about, but the Law of Success, the original book from 1925. That was written by Napoleon Hill is very, very different from the Law of Success in 16 Lessons and the Think and Grow Rich. Think and Grow Rich is a really watered-down version of the original manuscript, which had all the different steps. But when you alter your mindset about anything, whether it be relationships, health, or money, your circumstances change. They have to change. But it's gradual. It's not an overnight thing, because especially if you're, you know, in our age group, you know, you're getting into your 50s and 60s, it even impacts you more, because you've got decades of the I don't want to say wrong thinking, but of thinking that doesn't serve you properly. Okay, and when you start thinking differently, your circumstances do change. I've seen it happen dozens of times just in the last couple of years for myself. You know, but again, I still have habit patterns. I still have thought patterns that don't serve me, and I'm trying to throw them out. And there's a lot of techniques used for that. But the Robert Anthony, he's somebody I highly recommend that you check out. He's got a website. He's got a bunch of e-books out. He was actually the main source for The Secret. Now, he wasn't in the movie or the book, but his concepts were used in both. And he's got a website about how to create wealth, how to create, you know, a different type of life for yourself. That if you Google him, I forgot the name of his website, but it's Dr. Robert Anthony. He's brilliant, and he's probably the most well versed in describing why law of attraction works, how it works, and how to start shifting your mindset. And something you just said, Renee, is one of the biggest holdbacks for people, because they think it's unfair. There's nothing unfair about it. You bring into your experience what you think about. And if you're looking at somebody that's really, really wealthy, and you resent that they have that kind of wealth, and you're struggling, or you think it's ridiculous that they have that kind of wealth based on you're looking around and everybody else is struggling so much, and oh my gosh, that's just ridiculous, why don't they help more people? Believe it or not, that sets up a pushback against money. If you were to look at wealthy people and say, wow, I admire their lifestyle, doesn't mean you want it, it doesn't mean you want seven homes, but if you don't have a holdback to wealth, you start allowing it into your energy, so to speak, without getting too out there for people. You really have to have a different attitude towards money in order for it to come into you. If you have any kind of a pushback against wealth or wealthy people, or you think only wealthy people are greedy or things like that, believe it or not, that sets up a negative barrier to you ever getting it. Because it tells your brain that money isn't good, that wealth isn't good, that wealthy people aren't good.
Yeah, but I don't feel that way. I don't feel that way. I'm talking about the
use
overall,
the word on. Use the word unfair.
Yes, I'm talking about a sense of balance in our world. I'm not talking about individuals. Of course, I have tremendous respect, especially for people who weren't born with a silver spoon in their mouth and got themselves to a place like that. Absolutely, I have respect for that. And I, for many years, was affiliated with one of the richest families in South Florida. And he started with a little bit of nothing. And he left behind, when he passed a couple of years ago, he was a billionaire. So, I have lots of respect for that. Absolutely. Well, the reason I said there's people with seven homes all over the world, and then there's people that can't afford to live in a week-by-week rental, because I know so many people like that, and I know so many people who are struggling so great. I'm trying to show the the big ups and downs of the way our world is set up. And if you look in third world countries, oh my good God, there it's like atrocious. Atrocious. People living in the streets and three blocks down got a mansion, a castle. All I'm talking about is the difference there. And it has to do with people's heritage, what they know, how they live. You know, sometimes they never pull themselves out. I mean, it's on TV all the time about breaking the cycle of social service. And, you know, growing up on food stamps and all that kind of stuff, those shows are on all the time. All I'm trying to do is show the different relationships that people have with money. I absolutely have total respect for people who make their own way and build something that is that amazing. Absolutely. I don't really like Donald Trump a lot. I always pick on him because I think he's a buffoon, but that's a whole different story. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's, you know, that he knows how to wheel and deal. And he's been broke three or four times in to my knowledge, and still brings himself back. Then you have somebody like Ellen.
And money is a game. So he's gone bankrupt a couple of times, and he laughs it off because he knows that money is a renewable resource. And so when he goes in that place where he's bankrupt, he doesn't care because it's all a game to him. And a lot of the people that are really, really wealthy are there for that reason. It's not that they don't care about money, is that they have fun with it. It's a game to them. They win it, they lose, they win it, they lose it. And that's how they approach it. So they don't have that need mentality. When you have a need mentality, that's what you're generating. I don't have enough. I don't have enough. I don't have enough. I need, I need, I need. And so you stay in that energy. You stay in that, what you're creating in your life. You're staying in a need creation because you don't allow yourself to think abundantly. You don't allow yourself to think in a way that I can have that, I can have that. Maybe not tomorrow based on what you see in front of you, but you could have it eventually. And if you allow yourself to believe that, your circumstances will change. It's amazing.
Well, but you can't just have it tomorrow. You have to work
for it. I just said
it.
I said it's not going to happen tomorrow, but it will happen eventually.
Didn't mean
you have to shift
can't
your
have
thinking.
Okay, I'm saying that the only way you will have it tomorrow or next week or next year is if you work for it. But the whole idea of what you just said about Donald Trump and a lot of the other people, it is about their relationship with money. That's why I chose to talk about this, because our relationships with money are obviously all different, and they all stem from different growing up and different comments that are made to us as we grow up and different things that we see and we learn sometimes the hard way, sometimes the easy way. When in 1982, my house burnt to the ground. I want to share this. This is rather personal, and I'm a little bit ashamed of myself about it, but I'm going to say it anyway because I want people to understand how your relationship with things like this can fluctuate. And our house burnt down, and the insurance money that was at the bank just paid off the mortgage, gave us nothing else. So here we are, four kids, a husband and a wife, and Spike and I stayed in a motel, and I put all the kids with different best friends that where I was really close to their parents and everything. And we, you know, we ended up surviving. But over the weeks to come, people gave me money. Every time I turned around, somebody was walking up to me, hugging me, and I'd walk away, and there'd be a $50 bill in my pocket. Mm-hmm. Or somebody would come into the restaurant that I worked in, and they wouldn't say anything, and they'd get up, and I'd go to clear the table, and there'd be a check for $100 under their plate. I mean, it was amazing. And that happened for almost a year after the house burnt down. Now, this is a small town, upstate New York. Do you know that I began to expect that. I'm ashamed to say. I began to feel like, oh, I wonder what they're going to give me. Or I'd meet somebody who I knew, like the owner of a big store in this small town, and or the owner of a bar, or somebody that knew me really well. I think to myself, I wonder what they're going to give me. And I think about it now, and I think to myself, God, how immature was I to get to that place so quickly that I actually began to expect that everybody was going to just keep on helping me from now on out because of what happened. And I'm serious, Shelley, and I'm ashamed to say it out loud, but it's the truth. It is the truth that I began, every time I saw somebody, in the back of my mind would be thinking, oh, I wonder what they're going to give me. And
well, I wouldn't be so hard on yourself about that, because the bottom line is you've spent a lifetime helping others, and there's nothing wrong with then being in graceful, you know, receiving for people then to turn around and help you. I think you're putting too much weight on it. I do understand what you're saying, though, because in the beginning you were very grateful and it surprised you, and then all of a sudden
yep.
it was like expected. But that's actually okay to be in that energy as long as then you don't become a taker, and you never did. You've always been generous. You've always been generous with your time, with your heart, and whenever you have had money, you've always been generous with your money to people. So for you to go into that mode, I see it very differently than you do from the outside.
Well,
looking.
I mean, I forgive myself for it. Don't get me wrong. When I think about it now, I think to myself, what the hell was wrong with you? Why would you get there? Why would you even think that? And I'll tell you something else. It's happened, the fire. Then Mike got hit by the car. And again, so many people did things for me. And this time it wasn't so much money as it was, matter of fact, I don't really remember anybody like handing me money like they did after the fire, but people were incredibly supportive, and I began to expect that. And then that wore down after a while, and then the last time was when little Mike got hurt. And, again, it was about money. And the money wasn't given to me. It was given to my son's family. And a lot of people rallied and did things for him. But even then, I guess the point I'm trying to make is I went there. I can imagine other people go there. I can imagine, and I appreciate all the nice things you said about me, Shelley, and I know that's really how you feel about me. But it's the point I'm trying to make is the relationship that we build with stuff, with material stuff, like money, like homes, like vehicles, like clothes, like jewelry, like all the things that help identify us with the rest of the world, it can become... it can become almost, I want to say habit because that doesn't sum it up, but it's a dangerous place to go because then when it doesn't happen, then there's great disappointment and you feel as though nobody cares about you. You see a whole cycle get started with feelings like that. And
well, the one thing I would say about that, I agree with you to a point, but I don't. I think it's only dangerous if you allow it to evolve into greed, which is what I think what you're trying to warn people against. Don't get to the point where that's your sustenance and you don't move yourself along anymore. But it is perfectly okay to, if you're the type of person that's a giver. If you've been a taker your whole life, then obviously that's not good because it's just keeping you in a taking mode and you're never, you know, that always comes back on you, okay? But if you've been a giver your whole life and then something happens to you and you need to then receive from people, do it graciously and appreciatively. Don't feel guilty about it because of your actions of generosity and kindness, you put yourself in a position to then be able to have that come back to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you and I both believe in that, and I agree. It's a what goes around comes around kind of a thing, and you always, almost always get back what you put out. So for that, I've always been grateful, and I do believe in that. I do believe it's a cycle of giving and taking, and I think I've even talked on the show before about the fact that it always amuses me that very rarely do it happens, but it's more rare than it is commonplace to get back from another giver, not from somebody that you've given to before.
Right.
I had a great book for you. I have to run, but I wanted to just mention a book, The Gift of Taking. Believe it or not, there's a book, The Gift, and then there was a follow-up to that. I forget the author. You probably know, Shelley. It's called The Gift of Taking, and I think it would be a good book.
Uh-oh. I lost one. Shelley, did I lose you again?
I don't know. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, good.
Elise, you still there?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that book, and I've got to run. But I just, you know, if Shelley has heard of it, great, she can expound on it. If not, that's a book that she will definitely want to read.
It's a wonderful book.
Oh, good. So
you
know
about
it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, okay, Elise, are you going to call in tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning is my birthday. So
I know.
That's why
happy birthday.
I know. So Shelley and I can sing to you on the radio.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know about that tomorrow.
We'll tune in. We'll sing to you anyway.
Yeah. And so I'll let you
do that.
All right. Have a great day, sweetie.
All right, thanks. You too.
Uh-huh. Bye, Elise.
Bye, Shelley.
Okay, so let's. I think you know, Shel, where I'm coming from. All the different emotions that surround material things, and of course, material start with money. You can't have material things if you don't have money. So a lot of this is based on the relationship that you actually have with the money. And you and I, through the years, have talked about this a lot because we've both had our ups and downs and our plush and our threadbare and both. So we can talk with this with a little talk about money with a little expertise, not because we're balancing 15 checkbooks, but because we're balancing one. And it does have a great. It plays a big role in the place the world has gotten to. A big role in every corner. It plays a big role, like I said, about these people that start out with being wanting to change the world and making the world a better place, and eventually it becomes about how much money they can make by doing it. And we come up with all these amazing medical things, these, you know, life-saving medical procedures and what have you, and on top of your insurance, they want another small fortune. Otherwise, you can't have it done. I feel a little bit heartsick about the fact that we have so much, and yet we have so little. Does that make sense to you?
Well. And I used to feel the same way, so yes, I do understand what you're saying, but I don't feel that way anymore. And because I really do believe that people can bring more into what they're experiencing if they shift their outlook on what it is they're trying to bring into them. And I still believe that one of the things, the reason why I mentioned Robert Anthony, one of the things he talks about, you would agree with 100%, Reedy. One of the things he talks about, and he's one of these law attraction experts, is he said if you want to have a lot of money, he said you have to create solutions for people. He said you have to work in a way that helps people. He said if you're going to live a mediocre life and just get by, he says, that's going to be the life you're going to live. He said, but if you're going to look for solutions for people, whether it be for somebody on a personal level or somebody in a business level or whatever, he said, that will make you successful with money. He said, but then you also have to have a different relationship with money. And he goes into great detail. So I really recommend that people check out his website. He's got like 8 different e-books. He's probably the most well-versed in this, talking about money, of anybody. But he also talks about relationships and other things. But he's very well-versed in it, and I would highly recommend that people check out his – he's actually got one called How to Make Your Mind a Money Magnet. Not all of his stuff is about money, but since it is such a central need for us to produce our lives, he does spend quite a lot on it and on our attitudes towards money.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know, it is about there's always certain facts, and that is something that you you've touched on, and that is who works hard to get themselves to a place that they need to be, who is complacent and is willing to live in something that has kind of, they feel like has been preordained for them. And of course, there's always a lot of talk about the movers and shakers of the world. I don't know if every mover and shaker started out with feelings of philanthropy or I want to change the world because it sucks the way it is. I don't know how many of them started out that way. I know that today there's a lot more open-mindedness about the way our world is shaping up. And and I do think there's a lot of people out there that are really aware of the sadness that prevails in the lower levels. And I appreciate that because I do see people doing things, Shell. I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if you're going to do something, even though it can come back to you, I'm not fighting that. I'm just saying it shouldn't be about what's in it for me. That's all I'm saying. And if it's always about what's in it for me, then you're not who you say you are. Then you're not that, and you know me. I'm probably a reflection on myself than I am on anybody else. But that's the way I feel about myself. If I really, you know, like we talk about having a place that's going to help people detox.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do that, it's very expensive.
Right.
We've talked about this a lot. It's something that we really have a dream about, being able to help people get to this better place health-wise, mentally speaking, every part of their life. But everything takes so much money. So money is an issue that sits in the roots of everything, every seed we want to plant, right? Tomorrow I want to talk a little bit about the relationship that people have with family, parents, and siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's somebody out there that would like to talk about this, I hope Shelley will talk about it because I know a little bit about her life. I would like to talk about it. If you are out there and would like to say something about the relationship that you've had with your siblings or your parents, good or bad, we'd love to hear from you at 347-989-0352. Otherwise, go out and give today the best you've got. Happy one. It's supposed to rain here in South Florida, so stay dry, and everybody have a good one. God bless. Thanks, Shell. We'll talk after a while.
Sure. Yeah, have a wonderful day, Renee, and have a wonderful day, everyone.
All right. Bye-bye, babe.